Welcome to the My Data Podcast. I'm your host, Molly Schwartz. In this podcast, we take a deep dive into the biggest questions surrounding our personal data. Personal data is all that data that we're leaving behind us in our everyday lives. It's data about us that describes who we are and what we do. In every episode of this podcast, we talk to a guest who's involved in shaping the future of our personal data management. We get into all of it, the tech, business, policy, ethics, privacy, GDPR, and we're going to talk about how these big changes going on will affect you and your data. And if you would like to meet the people who we have on this podcast in real life, you should consider going to the My Data Conference. It's at the end of August in Helsinki, and you can find more information about the program and how to register on mydata2018.org. Now, time for our My Data Minute.
Hello, hello. My name is Riikka Kämppi, and I am the communication lead for My Data 2018. I will explain why I think My Data should be the concern for almost everybody. We pay for our digital services either with money or by giving up personal data, or combination of both. Ordinary people, children especially, don't know what they are consenting to or how their data is being used or misused by very powerful companies like Facebook. Data breaches and news about any misuse of personal data have had their effect. Last week of July, there was a huge drop in Facebook market value as user and revenues growth are slowing down. On the other hand, humanity could greatly benefit from open data, especially if people could use their personal data for self-development. So the significance of personal data is growing fast in economy and in all development, but only if there is trust. So we really need fair digital society, a global fair digital society. Let's start by understanding how to get there. Knowing what my data means and how it could be achieved should be on the agenda of every politician, teacher, journalist, democracy activist and thinker, in addition to lawyers, businessmen and technology people. So if you're hearing this, please join our movement for digital human rights. Now I will pass you on to Molly in New York with her next guest.
Our guest today is Xavier Lefebvre. Xavier lives in France, and he's the CEO and founder of a company called Fair and Smart. It's a data management startup that's directed at both businesses and individuals. So hi, Xavier. Can you tell me about how you became interested in personal data in the first place?
Hi, Molly. I'm very happy to talk to you. And hi, everyone. Well, the story goes back to 4 years ago, approximately. If you want the true story, I bought a video game for one of my kids, and I had to create an online account so that my kid could play to that game. So I was a little bit surprised, but anyway, I browsed into the terms and conditions. And then I noticed that the company which was publishing the video game would have access to the game my kid will play, and then what time and how long, and his progression in the game, that is to say he's a good player or a bad player. And I was like, whoa, this is for my son. This is really personal information. I'd like to have an alternative, or at least I'd like to disable the collection of those data. But I was unable to do it. And I said to myself, well, if I'm looking for an alternative here, maybe some of the people are also looking for an alternative. And since I didn't find any, I said, well, there's a room for me to build this alternative. So this is the story of my interest into the personal data.
Yeah. How old was your son at the time when you were going to be giving over this data about his video game playing?
He was 8 years old.
Just 8 years old. Wow. Yeah. I can imagine very like dystopian futures where they're tracking like kind of how smart kids are from this early age and stuff like that. I can understand your hesitation to give it all over. So then once you decided that you would like to build a solution for how to help people control what kind of personal data they were giving over, what were your next steps? Was that when you decided to start your own company?
Well, not really at the beginning. I began to, you know, just find information about what kind of solutions could be made, etc. How is it? Was it technically feasible? And then was it on the law aspects of the thing? What was the legislation at that time? So it was in a pre-GDPR world, of course, and also. Is there a real market for such a solution? That is, am I the only one guy interested in such solutions or not? So I spent, let's say, 12 to 18 months first to making all those studies, survey, a lot of readings, etc., before I started my company. But then, right after the GDPR publication at the European official journal, so that was back in 2016, I founded my company.
Okay, so pretty soon before the regulations came out.
Yes, the week after.
Wow, cool. And so I understand, since you deal with data management, you engage a fair amount with GDPR. Can you tell me about what your company does for its users in terms of complying with GDPR?
Sure. So actually, we are dealing with a very small part of GDPR conformity, but one which we, in our opinion, is very important. It is the B2C part, I would say, of GDPR compliance. So it is first everything that comes to the data subject rights. How, as a company, because there are large companies, of course, which have all the resources, they need to reply and answer properly to a data subject rights request. But think at all the small companies, which don't necessarily have IT resources and competences to reply. So our first goal is to help them reply in an appropriate way to a data subject right request. So it can be either a data access request or a right to be forgotten request or portability request, whatever. So we've designed a secure tool which help a company answer both in a pure form, that is to say, what do I write down as an answer? So first, and second, there's this secure channel for transferring data, because giving the data back to the people as an attachment in an email to us is not really a good experience. It's really throwing away one more time some personal data. So we wanted to make it a good experience, a premium experience for a company to offer to its customers. So this is the first solution. And the second aspect, it deals with the consents. You know that GDPR really changed the way we can collect and the conditions of a validity of a consent, etc. So we really tried hard. We worked hard to build a whole consent management platform, which is both easy to use for companies and easy to understand for the people. And our goal at the end is to help each and everyone having kind of a personal data dashboard, which allows you to really see what data you give permission to use to which company, for how long, and what purposes, etc. Whatever the company and whatever the data, but everything is really concentrated in one only dashboard. So this is my personal data dashboard, rather than 40 or 50 different customer care internet sites.
Yeah. So just to clarify, B2C is business to consumer. Is that what that stands for?
Sorry?
Or is B2C, just to clarify for our audience, that's business to customer? Or
Actually, we build a platform, so we act really as a trusted third party for personal data matters between the individuals and the organizations. So we have a B2C proposal, but a B2B proposal. So I've just presented you the two B2B solutions, you're right, but we also have this B2C solution, which is currently available in France. So it's a mobile application, which helps, I would say, my neighbor enforce her digital rights. So it's really within a few clicks, you download the app, and then you will be able to send tens of data access requests to as many companies as you want. And afterwards, you will be able to track what happens. Does this company answer? Did this company answer properly or not? And at the end of the 30 days, so at the end of the legal months that the company has to answer and get back to you, you will be able to I would say you do what you want, that is to say either nothing or maybe claim for something or go to a court or whatever, or signal that this company didn't answer in a good way to your request. And you will have all the documents, etc. you need to make it.
Got it. So this is really interesting to me. It sounds like you're really focusing in on how to help both the businesses and individual people comply with and be able to benefit from the regulations that GDPR laid out. How are you making sure, can you break down for me how you're making sure the data transfers are secure and what protocols you're using for consent management?
Okay, so our security layer rely on a French patent, French solution. It's an end-to-end encryption solution, which has been developed by the French laboratory INRIA and CNRS, and it has been put on the market by another startup, which is a spin-off from those two laboratories, and we use their solutions actually. So it's end-to-end encryption into JavaScript keys, using JavaScript encryption keys. That is to say that we can make end-to-end encryption without any hardware. So this is really important. And for the individual, the only thing you need is a browser. And everybody has a web browser at home or on its device. So we can really, there's no barrier here. So this is for the security layer. And on the other hand, on the consent, this is probably one of the most difficult part, because the GDPR says, well, a valid consent must be informed and into easy to understand words, etc., etc. Okay, but concretely speaking, what does it mean? What is a simple way of asking, etc.? And it's not the same actually if you're talking a kid which who's less than 60 year old, and then an adult who is 40 maybe, and then an elderly person after 70 year old, for example. Probably if you're asking for the same consent, you will not ask it the same way, or not really using the same words, etc., if you want to do things good. So we have worked a lot on those aspects so far, but I'm sure we still can improve a lot our solutions on those aspects. But we also trying to use, and this is my last point, we're trying to use standard icons into our consent platform so that you can just in the blink of an eye as an individual, you can see broadly speaking what the company is asking you. So if it's for marketing purposes, for example, or if it's the core service, or if it's to share with a third party, etc., you can really easily see what's going on here.
Got it. So that's almost like your service is annotating terms and conditions in a way with these icons that break down for people clearly so they can give true consent.
Well, that's our goal, and it's really what we're trying to achieve. But of course, it's really an ongoing work, and it's never over. And we can improve it. It's a continuous improvement, if I may say so.
Yeah, no, but it's a big question. I think a lot of people are grappling with how do we actually facilitate real consent. So it's interesting to hear the tack that you all are taking. And then when you're talking about this personal data dashboard, is that kind of something that people access through Fair and Smart? Like they'd go to some like Fair and Smart site on their browser?
Oh, it's a very good question, because we had a lot of thoughts about this. One of the first questions to answer is, where will we store the data? And then there are, I would say, three main options: on the mobile device, first solution, or on a computer, which you have at home, so it's the second solution, or in the cloud. Well, our position at the end was that we will store the data only in the cloud. Only in the cloud, but in a very secure way. So we were not able to guarantee the highest level of security using your personal computer at home. We were not able to guarantee that there were no hacker or whatever that could target you specifically. Whereas in the cloud, we have different solutions to at least reduce the risk. And regarding the storing the data on the mobile device, the problem is what happens if you lose it or if you break it? And then if you want to get access to your data again, it means that there's a backup somewhere. And if there's a backup in the cloud, well, then store the data directly in the cloud. So the personal data of our customers are stored really in the cloud. So for now, it's only data of French citizens. So the data of the French people are stored in France, but we're also launching in Luxembourg, and the data of the Luxembourgish people are stored in Luxembourg. And this is our model, to store the data of the citizens in the country they live.
Yeah, what made you come to that decision to have data stored locally?
It helps the people be more confident in your solution. This is the first reason. The second one, that it's important for us as a C2B platform to be able to work also with public administrations. And public administrations or health services really do prefer working on companies which store the data locally. So right. Officially, of course, there's no problem with working with a foreign company. But what we have experienced is that it really helps to have a subsidiary in the country and say that, well, we store the data in your country.
Right. So both the users, the people using your service, and the administrators kind of feel more comfortable when the data is stored locally. That's interesting.
Hi. My name is Teemu Ropponen. I work for the MyData Conference, and in particular with our great partnerships. I'd like to remind you that the MyData 2018 Conference is just around the corner. At the end of August, up to 800 people will gather in Helsinki, Finland. We're lined up for over 130 speakers in over 50 sessions, half a dozen side events on the day leading up to the conference. It's a truly co-created conference with people from all over the world gathering to look at the future of personal data from business, legal, tech, and societal angles. As a listener of this podcast, you'll probably like it, but why don't you see for yourself? Study the program and get your pass at mydata2018.org. We make it happen. We make it right. Now, back to the podcast.
I am wondering, it sounds like you all were kind of ready to hit the ground running once GDPR came out to provide services that would help people comply with it. What industries had you worked in previously that prepared you to be able to launch right away?
Oh, I've worked for approximately almost 10 years in IT consultancy services. So It really helped me, only in France and Luxembourg, but it helped me, I would say it helped me see the way a certain number of companies use personal data of their customers. I worked most of the time on really core business application development projects. So that was really interesting. And of course, I'm not an engineer myself, but I'm really fond of technologies. And spending 10 years in IT consultancy company really helped me have a good understanding of the different technologies that are available out there and which one would the best to implement to make a safe safe solution, both secure and easy to use and easy to maintain and make evolve in the future.
Right.
So this really helps.
I bet that you kind of stand out with your name, Fair and Smart. I was wondering, it's pretty bold. How did you come up with that name for your company?
Our goal was to have a meaningful name, and the promise is in our name. What we were all dreaming at when we created the company is to promote a fair and smart use of our personal data in the digital age. And we have the digital age, we have the personal data. What we didn't have was the fair and smart part of it. So we say, well, let's call it fair and smart, and this is it.
Right, because that was the piece that you were going to add in. And I was actually wondering, I know that this is something that people have talked about a lot, but how would you kind of succinctly list the basic rights that people got with GDPR? Like, what if you were just to list them quickly to someone who is like, I don't understand anything about what these data protection regulations are coming out of the EU, how would you describe them very briefly?
I would talk about three rights only. I would say the first one is the right of access. It's just know who knows what about you. This is it. You have the right to know what kind of data a company has about you. So first, know who knows what. Then the right to be forgotten. So it's pretty easy to understand, but it is to say, well, you have the right to make erased some of your data if you think that either they are not used in an appropriate way or they have been used in a wrong way, or you think that they are updated or that you no longer want this company to have or to store some of your data. And the last one, of course, is the right of opposition, is that you can at any time say no to a commercial exploitation or a commercial use of your personal data or of the personal data of your children. And this is important in today's world. So I would really focus on those three rights.
Yeah. Thanks for that. That was very clear. And so the right to opposition means that, for example, with the video game that your son wanted to play, he would be able to play that without giving over the data, essentially.
Yes, or at least the right to opposition would guarantee that there won't be any further commercial use of his data. But what I would really have appreciated at that time is that there no collection of any personal data of my son ever, since I paid for this video game, and it was something like 50 euros if I remember well. So this is, I think it's enough money, so to pay anonymously or whatever.
Yeah, no, definitely. So I was wondering, it sounds like the way that you've approached your business so far is to kind of focus locally. So it sounds like some of the tech that you're using is French, you're based in France, data stored locally, and now you're moving to Luxembourg. Do you see a great benefit to trying to kind of start locally? And do you have any worries about how you'll scale the company bigger if you're taking this approach?
Yes. Well, what I've noticed in the run is that dealing with personal data is really complicated, and it's not an easy business. I mean, it's first there's a lot of legal framework. So of course there's a GDPR, but there's not only GDPR. There's also e-privacy. There's eIDAS. There's DSP2, etc. So there's a lot of different. I would say the legal framework is pretty big, and you have to take it into account, and then it's really important to me to focus on a particular country to begin with, because if you go in every, because there are little differences between France and Germany, it's almost the same, but there are little differences. So to begin with, I think you need to focus on one and only legal framework. And then you also need, since we are on a, I would say, a new businesses, and we are trying to make it happen, we are trying to find new ways, so we need to experiment, and it's easier to experiment in a cultural environment that you know, because we don't have found so far the perfect personal data service which may scale up in any country that easily, just by, you know, tapping your finger. So we're still experimenting, and it's really more efficient to experiment in one country, one more time, and in a country in which you may know a lot of different people, to go faster and then make a value proposal faster. And at the end, it's also that thinking big is important, but well, I'm 41, so I know that having a small success somewhere is important before making promises that you won't be able to won't be able to hold your word. What I mean is that we're dealing with personal data, so we are dealing with the lives of the people. So it's really important. We're not here to do stupid things or try and say, well, it didn't work, too bad, but forget about it. No, it's not acceptable. So we need to be serious, and to be serious, and we need to achieve small goals, and one little goal after another, etc. We will build a strong solution that afterwards we will be able to scale up in other countries. But that was really our state of mind, I would say.
Yeah. Can you tell me where people can find information about you and about the work that you're doing? Do you have any like websites, Twitter handles that you'd like to share?
Sure. We have our website, so www.fairandsmart.com. So it's available in French, in English, and very soon in German as well. There's also our Twitter account. We have a Facebook page and a LinkedIn page as well. So you can find a lot of different information, and we are also trying to publish almost 2 weeks, every 2 weeks, an article to the community on a particular subject. So it can be a link to GDPR, but not only, it can also be a link to the next business model in a self-data world or in a human-centric data world, etc. We're really thinking a lot about that each and every day, and we're trying to share as much as we can with the community.
Great. Awesome. Well, thanks so much, Xavier. Those are all of my questions. Is there anything that we haven't touched upon yet that you would like to talk about?
To those who have listened to this interview, feel free to contact me if you want further information or to get in touch with Fair and Smart. I have a personal message, maybe, if you allow me, Molly. Fair and Smart is currently looking for local partners on most domestic European markets. So if you run a startup or a company in Germany or UK or Poland, Italy or Spain, please contact me and see if we can work together. That's great. Or let's meet in Helsinki.
Yeah, that'd be great. I'll see you in August in Helsinki. Thanks, Xavier. Bye.
Thank you very much, Molly. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the My Data podcast. The My Data conference takes place in Helsinki, Finland, August 29th to 31st, 2018. Find out more on this year's conference website at mydata2018.org. The show notes and video versions of this podcast are available on the My Data Global Network website at mydata.org. you can contact us via email at podcast@mydata.org or on Twitter @mydata.org. We thank the Metropolitan New York Library Council for letting us record in their studio at 599 11th Avenue in New York City. Music is by David Cutter Music and Joachim Karud. This podcast is copyright MyData 2018. The MyData podcast was produced by me, Gianfranco Cicconi. The host was Molly Schwartz. Video and audio are available for redistribution under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial License version 4.0 International. See you next time.